Should we go left or right? Or
oh, wait work? A minute. We're starting, and there's the Paramount logo. I remember when we thought that up.
That's Jerry Zucker.
That was... Okay, we'll ID ourselves. I'm Jerry Zucker.
Jim Abrams.
David Zucker.
John Davison.
And this is Paramount Pictures presenting...
It's in color.
You probably wanted us to say something.
See, we have nothing to say.
Well, this shot was done by Praxis Filmworks, Robbie Blalack, and it's all cotton wool and a little airplane tail on a track.
Yeah, but was this in the script or was this
yes.
added?
This was done on a big plywood table with covered with this.
I remember when we started to talk to Elmer Bernstein about the score, we're trying to tell him that we wanted a B-movie score. We did not actually want, like, a really good score, but he got it. He was...
Rose to the occasion.
Well, that's the old LAX before they did the second deck.
So anyways, do you think we should, like, talk about how the movie actually got started?
Good.
Okay, so this was probably the first draft we probably wrote in 1974.
Yeah. First.
While we were doing our Kentucky Fried Theater on Pico.
And the way we used to get material for the theater is we would leave a video recorder on all night long.
To try to get the commercials so we could do spoofs.
Because that's when they do the stupidest commercials and the cheapest commercials.
And so one morning we're looking at this, what we got the night before, and there weren't very many good commercials to work with, but there was this airplane movie, the disaster film, which was Zero Hour from 1957, starring Dana Andrews, Linda Darnell, and
Sterling Hayden.
Written by Arthur Haley.
Right.
Yeah, who did all the airport movies. So we started to get into it. We said, well, we could do a parody of this and see what happens. So we started to write a movie called The Late Show.
The Late Show, because the idea was still to put all our commercial gags and just tie it together with some movie in between. So the idea of the movie was going to be, basically, you're going to watch all these commercial spoofs, but then we'd go to the actual movie for, you know, a couple minutes and then back to commercials.
And the first guy we brought that script to was Lloyd Schwartz, who's...
whose wife we're looking at the backup right now.
Yeah, that's Barbara Mallory. And he liked it, but he said this airplane story seems to be funnier and more interesting than your commercial spoofs.
Cut out the commercials and just do the story, so...
That's what we did, huh?
So we thought that seemed like a good idea.
Yeah.
And then wrote the first draft, which had about 20 of the good jokes from the final version and a lot of talking, a lot of shoe leather.
There's your credit, John.
The voices you hear...
That's Howard...
Howard Jarvis.
That's Howard Jarvis in 13.
They were the actual people who did the no parking at LAX.
That's right, the red zone.
Yep.
We got the actual couple.
Yes.
Yeah, and that's how they make their living, is by doing these...
No, they make the machinery. Reporting.
They make the machinery, so they did the voice.
Yeah, they just did.
Wait a minute. Here comes my wife.
Oh. Well, we'll stop for a minute.
Nancy.
There she is. She is, Nancy.
I met her. She was an extra, and we met that day.
And there she was.
I said, she was, stop the camera.
How about that chick and the wife?
Jerry's up here right there.
There's us. That's me, and there's David.
And there's David.
This is why it's good to have three directors, because, see, well, two are acting, one can be directing.
Yeah, and this is the model that Howard was so angry about.
Oh, that cost $40,000.
Yeah.
It's not a model. It's a full size.
It's a full size. Yeah. Three-quarter size.
Three-quarter size.
And they covered it in plaster, and it weighed a ton.
Oh, wait a second. You can see some guy pulling
tons.
Cable,
oh, yeah.
I think,
here's
right
the guy.
Now
here's
on the left. No, no, it's
yeah, right
later.
There.
Just on the left, the guy, a technician pulling cable.
That's always good. Picture was so cheap. That was,
this was also
left it in.
Half of these people are just people going to their flights. The people right behind are extras. But
this was low budget.
They couldn't shut this down. This is the main thoroughfare. So I remember shooting in the airport was not easy. It was like shooting in an airport.
And that's why we either couldn't control the costumes of the extras or she just misinterpreted our instructions, but you can see all the big collars. Once we got on the plane, everybody was supposed to have really 50s-era clothes, which really helps to make the movie timeless because we don't have any of those stupid 70s fashions.
Which brings to mind another story, which is that we always had envisioned this movie as a kind of a 50s style, and we had always thought of it as on a prop plane because that's what Zero Hour was, and we loved the sound of those engines and the drum of the prop plane. And when we came to Paramount with the movie, Eisner loved the script, but he said, you got to do it on a jet plane. And it's hard to imagine, but the three of us actually struggled with this. We were almost going to, and we had no other offers to make the movie. I mean, a bunch of other places had turned us down, but we had such integrity that we were just going to say no because we had always envisioned it on a prop plane. And finally, we succumbed and said, okay, we're going to sell out because we really want to make the movie and maybe it wouldn't be so bad. And in fact, Eisner was totally right, and it wouldn't have been as good because you wouldn't have identified with the present day aspect of it, just the old movie aspect.
You can see the string there.
Eisner said, you may well go on to make this movie on a prop plane and you may be right, but it won't be at the studio.
Wow.
And so we thought about it and we came back.
And then there were other studios that had worse ideas. Remember American International when they were going to make it?
Yeah.
They said, we'll let you make the picture, but it's got to be with Dom DeLuise.
Yeah,
you know?
And Harvey Korman. I'll control casting. I'll control.
Oh, that's right.
He died, that guy.
Jerry Henshaw.
Yeah. And then United Artists Theater Circuit, who we took it back to after we had done Kentucky Fried Movie there, said that they wanted to do it as a 20-minute centerpiece as part of a Kentucky Fried
sketch
movie
film.
Too, so that would be the, like Fistful of Yen was in Kentucky Fried Movie, Airplane would be this 20-minute centerpiece, and we said no to that too.
And we pitched it to the guy at Warner Brothers, loved the idea, and we handed him the script, and he didn't like the script.
Yeah.
And then Avco Embassy, remember, was going to do it for a while, and they couldn't come up with the money?
Well, what
it was
happened
a million
with
dollars. What a million one we wanted.
What happened with Avco is we kind of sequestered ourselves away, do you remember that, for a while, because we had to make the decision, should we go to Avco or Paramount Avco?
No, it was AIP.
Because our lawyers wanted us to go with AIP.
And Avco, I think. Oh. Yeah.
Because one of the guys in the law
Bob
firm was...
Bob Ramey really wanted the picture. Yeah. Bob Ramey loved this movie and was head of the studio at that time. But we were for Avco, right?
Yeah. But then we actually decided, after we debated, okay, we'll go to Avco. But we called up Paramount to say, I'm sorry, we're going to make the movie at Avco. And we talked to Jeffrey Katzenberg. And the Express... intent of the conversation was say, sorry, we're going to go somewhere else. And the conversation was 3 minutes long, and at the end of it, we were making the movie at Paramount.
Jeffrey was very persuasive.
He's brilliant. And I mean, we took like a week.
Come on. Jimmy Walker.
Lists of factors.
Jimmy Walker, yeah. There was a move afoot at the studio during that time. They said, fine, you can have Lloyd Bridges and Robert Stack and Leslie Nielsen and Peter Graves, but they wanted to fill it with
comedy cameos,
which we didn't really want to do. And basically, we would be calling at agents and have the people who Howard Koch and others would just tell agents, oh, this is going to be a crappy film. You don't want your client in this.
Yeah.
And because we didn't want any of these people. The one we ended up with, who ended up to be great in the movie, really, was Jimmy Walker. But that's
who Jerry kept calling him JJ.
And he said, I'm Jimmy.
I am not. My name is not JJ.
And I think Paramount wanted Barry Manilow to be the guy to fly down the plane.
There were a lot of suggestions.
At one time.
Because he lived next door to Michael Eisner.
David's and my sister in the middle there.
And that's Mallory.
And our cousin Mallory on the left. Let me see.
And Howard Koch gave some great advice when they said, Barry Manilow, Howard Koch said, don't worry about things that will go away.
Yeah. Remember Bruce Jenner came in to read a couple of times.
Oh, yeah.
And we screen tested David Letterman.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
That's right.
For this part.
And then later showed the screen test on the David Letterman show.
Have a nice trip. It's a pun.
Oh, there's a pun.
Yeah.
Smoking.
Beware of gun puns.
Here's high production value right here.
This picture has no production value.
Just a fence.
I want to point out where you can actually see the scotch tape holding the set together.
There's several. There's a couple.
Oh, yeah.
No stock footage.
No.
But then there was a whole fight to get to be able to put three directors on the credits.
Yes.
Oh, gosh.
When they insist the Directors Guild... Yeah. Was prohibiting us from
one man, one film.
It's left over from the Capra days, and
they actually voted us down, and then we went back again a second time, and we had new evidence or something. I can't remember.
Jerry legally changed his name to Abraham's middle initial and last name Zucker's and joined the DGA, and they issued a card. Do you see what I mean?
No, and I just, oh. It kills me that I don't have that anymore, because I actually had a card that said Abraham's and Zucker's.
And so we were going to direct it under that name. Yeah.
Under the name of the
and
director.
And when they found out about it, of course, the card was just churned out by the bureaucrats.
Yeah, yeah.
And when Elliot Silverman found out about it,
But I don't think there's anything they could have done, because I legally went and changed my name to
They would have had to. Yeah.
Yeah. But in the end, it was the guy who's... The second vote was a tie, and Gil Cates was, I think, vice president and would voted in case of a tie. And he voted in our favor.
That's why
each time
in the the Directors Guild elections, I always vote for Gil Cates.
Whatever Gil Cates is running for, he gets my vote. He was our hero, yeah.
I think Arthur Hiller helped out, too.
Yeah, he was sympathetic.
And Warren Beatty signed our application.
And Howard made a real impassioned speech.
Well, Howard
was
great.
Was the biggest supporter.
I don't think we would have ever gotten through the studio system, the four of us, without Howard. Because we were so uppity. And every time the studio had an actor they wanted us to consider that we thought we were wrong, we were like ready to go into Eisner's office and threaten to quit. And Howard would always say, just, you know, it'll work itself
it'll
out.
Away.
They'll probably
don't
go
do
away.
Anything, yeah.
They'll probably, you know, we'll do the screen test or we'll do the thing that probably, you know.
The other great piece of advice from Howard Koch was buy a tuxedo.
Yeah.
Because over the years, you're going to rent one so frequently. So just buy one now.
Here's one of our rules of comedy coming up, Jim.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, yeah, what is it?
Knocking down the posts.
Ground control, we're loaded and ready to taxi.
Goodbye, Bill.
Goodbye, darling. I love you, darling.
So we thought this would be really funny just because we were doing a satire on a scene. It was from the movie Since You Went Away. And she was chasing along the train.
We thought that would be funny.
We thought people would laugh just because it was they would connect this train thing.
Oh, this is the line that nobody ever laughs at.
I love
but
it.
But I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
It's here. It doesn't work. I thought that made me laugh.
No, it's
hard. It doesn't work.
But it didn't get a laugh until she started knocking down the posts.
That's right. So we always had a rule after that you have to knock down the posts.
So to speak.
So to speak.
But unfortunately, we never made another movie with a post in it.
Yeah. we just were waiting to apply that rule.
Yeah.
Scream with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar did this movie for a rug.
He didn't want to do it initially,
which later he turned out to need. Huh?
Yeah, we thought actually it was the greatest line ever by an agent. They said he's got to have, I think it was $30,000.
He wants to buy
because he wants to buy this rug, and that's what it cost. And it was more than we had in the budget for it. But we said okay, and we thought it was just this, you know, agenting. But then we saw an article in the newspaper that he had actually bought this rug.
This is a big moment. When Steve Stucker, who plays the airline controller, first saw that miniature at a screening of the movie, he said, oh, it's just hanging there.
and followed by his cackle.
it's just hanging there.
That's amazing.
It's pretty cheap.
This scene was taken right out of Zero Hour. Mm-hmm. Not...
Yeah, we used to run old movies all the time and just take serious lines and scenes and moments. And there are tons of lines here that can be traced back to all kinds of different B-movies, a lot of flying movies that we saw. And
See the Scotch tape holding? It's a good shot of the set being held together.
Scotch tape. Let's move in. Let's
can we freeze frame here, yeah, I guess?
Let's focus in on that Scotch tape.
It's really low budge.
Yeah.
The picture cost $3.5 million in 1980.
Look at all the luggage, the open luggage racks.
Yeah. That's right, the old days. And there are three seats on one side and two seats on the other. I don't think there are any airplanes that have three and two. We just made that up.
There probably weren't then.
Yeah. Well, I think we're pretty much out of stories.
So you're done. Those were
folks can go back to the regular soundtrack now and enjoy the movie.
Because we front-loaded all them stories.
Who's this woman? What's she doing in our movie?
Yeah.
She wound up being in a...
She can be seen in a lot of... Yeah. Boy, we're scraping the barrel now.
I remember when we first met. It was during the war. I was in the Air Force.
Oh, I'll tell a story about another Kareem thing. Originally, the Kareem part was written for Pete Rose.
And we went
to Pete Rose to try to get him to be in the movie, but we filmed during the summer, and he was playing baseball. And so our fallback position, I guess, was Kareem, and we kind of rewrote the part to make it specific to him.
And who played the part in Zero Hour?
Crazy Legs Hirsch.
That's right.
True.
And the co-pilot was the guy who really couldn't act. Remember in Zero Hour?
But so Pete Rose turned down the movie, but then bet us all $1,000 that the team would win.
And I still have that check.
Yeah, it's still...
Now, this is the only part of the movie that was filmed on the Paramount lot. Everything else was filmed at Culver Studios.
Yeah, and somebody got hurt in this. Didn't that girl get hurt by the chair?
Well. That's funny, when she flies down of that chair, for a moment she tries to pull her skirt down.
Yeah. I know. She wants to be ladylike.
It's funny, because,
Oh, yeah.
Why?
You can see the big pads.
Big pads in their back. Well, wait till the guy gets stabbed in the back now.
Oh, yeah.
He has a sign on his back that says, stick the knife here.
Didn't we shoot this all in like 2 days?
Two days.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. So the old days.
On stage 7 at Paramount.
The whole picture shot for, I think, 34 days.
Is that all?
Yeah.
Wow.
34 days.
Good for us.
Could never do it again.
And we were tired after that.
I gained 15 pounds.
And a wife.
I lost the 15 pounds.
You look great, Jim.
Thank you.
Yeah. For those of you who can't really see Jim, he looks great.
Muscled, oiled.
Muscled, oiled, thin, tan.
Yeah. Very much like the guy on the right here.
Athletic.
Well, there's Bill West from our theater in Madison.
Now, this guy who's dancing in Julie, look at his back. I mean, do you think maybe he's going to get a knife? It's bulging a little bit.
What's going to happen?
Yeah. We didn't even take it off for, the shots before he got stabbed. It's
early homophobia.
Yeah.
I was afraid to approach her, but that night, fate was on my side.
As a matter of fact, I think there's a hole where you got it the first take.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that was good.
No, look at that. Conveniently had a piece of balsa wood in his back.
Yeah,
it's
just a
as fate would have it, the man who got stabbed was wearing balsa.
In fact, I think he was made of balsa wood. Just one of those things.
Automatronic mannequin.
That's
what I'm talking
about. That's not necessarily worth waiting for.
Yeah. Was that the one
you guys came
early?
Up with this? Yeah. Dave and Jerry came up with this, and I remember getting to work that day when they started spinning around.
Oh, was in that contraption?
Yeah.
It was the contraption.
Wait for your laugh.
Yeah. Really?
Well, there was a screening process.
They rehearsed this thing for many
now
weeks.
For an hour.
Yeah.
And the song is a little speeded up, too, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, 10%. You're right.
We have to get permission.
Now, you have to watch here when Bob gets flipped. Oh, no, that's, I guess that's coming up in a second.
That's the Texas switch.
That's, yeah.
You can see him waiting.
You can see him waiting because it's a double that lands in the audience. Yeah. It'll happen in a second.
This is that morning.
Silly. Yeah, right.
Now here's,
and there, that's a double. Now there's Bob in the background.
You're on the right.
And then there comes out.
Seamless filmmaking. You
know, not
how
a lot of
did
takes.
They do that?
Yeah. One take, no waiting.
This is the days before you could get rid of that with special effects. Yeah, we couldn't have afforded it anyway.
Yeah, there was no painting out of wires then, or.
Oh, this was also just on the day we said, Bob said, do you juggle?
We looked on his resume. Any special skills? Horseback riding, juggling.
So he couldn't get a horse in.
So we threw in these.
Balls.
Yeah. So he's giant. He actually.
This was not something
him.
We sat down and thought of in working on the script. Yeah.
Bob, at the same time we were filming Airplane, was filming a TV series. So he'd go back and forth. From the series.
That's right. He was doing Angie.
Angie, yeah. Good guy.
Now, do you think there's enough time here before we get back down? Because the audience really likes to see this kind of slow camera movement. I think it's very artsy.
It's very artsy. Yeah,
nobody ever appreciated that.
The directorial.
It's
pretty good. This is what Katzenberg talked about, the hills and valleys, right?
Yeah.
This would have been the valley then?
Yeah, this would be the valley here.
Always good to see two people hugging.
For 25 minutes.
There, before,
before the dummy comes in.
Recap a joke.
I never wanted it to end. I guess I still don't. But enough about me. I hope this hasn't been boring for you. It's just that whenever I start to talk about Elaine, I always...
She insisted on doing this. I remember, you know, we could have had a stunt double or something.
And she insisted on actually hanging from her neck.
Was that guy a mannequin back there on the right? I think he's a mannequin. We couldn't afford extras. Yeah, that's a mannequin. Yeah, he doesn't even blink.
We couldn't afford a mannequin that good.
That's pretty good, though. Look at him. He hasn't blinked yet.
It's an extra. What do you want?
That's got to be
Norman.
Got to be him. Yeah.
You know, Shaft is out again. It's been remade.
With Al White?
No. But that was sort of
came into audition for this bit, and they made up that stuff.
They made up all this.
We did not write it.
In the script, we just wrote mofo shim mafo.
three white guys from Milwaukee writing black jazz.
We apologized to all these guys when they came into audition, but Al and Norm just sort of took it and made it work.
This is straight from Zero Hour.
No, actually, it was from Crash Landing.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, from another movie. They had two adults were doing the same dialogue.
Right.
Without the punchline.
Yeah, without the punchline.
You know, on the set, they used to have a tape of Zero Hour, which when they were going to shoot a scene, they would look at the same scene in Zero Hour so they knew where to put the camera.
We knew this was the only movie we could direct. You know, it's
a great first movie. It's like a movie with training reels for directors.
Yeah, basically, you had people sitting in rows of seats, you know, fixed rows. So
facing forward.
Wasn't a lot of movement.
And it had already been shot before, so all I had to do is have the video.
Sort of an amazing thing about this scene is people saw this and they said, wow, you guys did such a great send-up of From Here to Eternity. And none of us had ever seen it. That's just sort of a coincidence. You know, sometimes you get credit for things you really
didn't. We probably
had
seen still pictures.
You'd seen send-ups from Here to Eternity.
But that wasn't the intent of this.
Yeah,
that was cold.
Boy, I remember trying to get a wave.
Yeah, and Julie took the brunt of it.
You can see her face. She's really, not there. But the one before, you could see the moment. She's just freezing.
And he's up on a big stand for his shots.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had to get to the beach and shoot this and then get back to the studio in order to shoot all the hospital scenes in the same day.
Is that true? Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
I don't even recall that.
Boy, this picture was badly scheduled.
Who's in charge of that stuff?
Yeah. Below their radar.
When will you be back?
I can't tell you that. It's classified.
Oh, Ted, please be careful.
She's very pretty.
So much.
And very nice.
Yeah.
I love you.
Yeah,
she was one of those people that we met and read you know, hundreds of people for that role, and she came in, and it was just...
She's the one who laughed at
it. Right, yeah, she was just, she made us laugh, she made it work.
She is that character.
Very sweet. And, you know, I think it was one of the first days of auditions, and I met her on the elevator going up. She was wearing a big full-length fur coat, and it was in New York. And it turned out she had once dated a friend of mine.
How'd it work out?
Evidently not very well, because she was single by the time of this thing.
This is Captain Oliver, Mr. Murdoch, and Mr. Foster. This is Joey Hammond.
Well, hi, Joey.
Peter Graves did this movie, I think, because his wife loved the script.
And she laughed at the screen.
And she was howling at the premiere with the
she was hysterical.
Screen,
We met with Peter Graves. He said he couldn't understand why we wanted him to do it.
I think it's the script is funny, but why me?
Yeah.
Why don't you get some comedians?
Yeah, he said, why don't you get some funny people? And we said, well, we think you're funny.
Yeah, you're funnier than those guys.
So here's something you can cut. When we were writing this, because we were basically just doing Zero Hour, we transcribed Zero Hour, and I was the only one of the three of us who knew how to type. And so I would do the typing when we were writing. And so when we transcribing... Have you ever been in a cockpit before? And then I put in the line, the kid says no, and I put in the line, have you ever sucked a grown man's cock? And David and Jerry said, no, you can't say that.
After we laughed, I mean, that was like funny to say in the room, but of course we can't use that, you can't say that in the movie.
And that would have kind of been a deal breaker.
He put that in for just to amuse us, but then we thought, wait a minute, we can use this somehow.
You know, Jim, maybe you should describe to the audience what a typewriter is. This is 20 years ago.
That's right.
Now, there's a huge pause coming up at the end of this scene, you'll see, because this got a very big laugh in the theater. I don't imagine people at home laugh that long. But you'll see now, we're just on this kid forever.
Let's go.
There we go. Okay.
There's a 70s collar that slipped through. Boy, always irritates me to see that.
You like movies about gladiators?
It's just hanging.
It's hanging. You can see the wires.
It's so cheesy.
Oh, and also the prop plane sound instead of the jet noise.
That's what we did. We compromised with Eisner. We didn't tell him about the compromise, but we put it on a jet. But when we went to do the sound, we made it the sound of a prop plane.
We showed him, didn't we? Try to get a job at Disney.
In fact, the first time we showed the rough cut, we went to Eisner's house and showed it to him at his house. I guess that was the tradition at Paramount during those days. And from the
tradition with movies under $4 million.
He used them to show to his kids.
You can't actually afford a theater, but you could hear his sons or his son or something laughing from the
kids were in the booth.
So that's what we knew.
Yeah,
at least.
And I remember that we said after the screening, said how much he liked it, and we said, you know, you should really see about working at Disney.
This Paramount thing is going to last long.
Yeah.
But he was always our biggest supporter and really the only one who saw the potential in the script.
Well, he and Jeffrey.
The script, remember how I got the script?
No.
Remember, we sent it to United Artists, who passed on it. But a lady at United Artists, Susan Bearwald,
was having dinner.
Was a friend of Eisner's and was having dinner with him and said, you know, we passed on this picture at UA and you ought to take a look at it.
Yeah.
And so he immediately called Don Simpson and said, have those guys in Katzenberg's office Monday.
Important right now. They've cleared you of any blame for what happened on that raid. Isn't that good news?
John Soley did that painting.
Did he?
But does that exist somewhere now?
Six men didn't return.
Is that up in your living room, John?
No, I have no idea.
Who knows? Yeah.
It's amazing this exists still. You know?
The off-camera spit take.
Isn't that wonderful?
I'm chuckling because I'm thinking of Marcy Goldman's coming up. Oh, man.
Hey, Stryker, how about a break? I'm getting tired.
Yeah, all right. Take five.
Thanks.
Not quite the big laugh we thought.
But it must have got a laugh if it was left
in
the movie.
It in,
yeah, if we left it in, it kind of
mirrors on the ceiling and...
The screening process of this picture was such that we would go to different universities
right.
and run the picture, and every time people didn't laugh at a joke, we would take it out. So the picture got consequently cut down to about 78 minutes before we added the credits back. But the television version is...
Oh, this is John's voice. Listen.
Lieutenant Hurwitz. We don't have to listen.
That's John's voice. John put...
I wanted to hear Ethel Merman. That was actually not Ethel Merman.
Here we got... Remember Ethel Merman's one request? Did she bring her own hairdresser with her? And we were surprised. This was the result.
Thank God.
She was so... And we were so delighted to have her. She was such a delight. She was the sweetest lady.
She was wonderful.
Yeah.
As
hell.
Here's more of those bad dissolves.
We paid a good 50 bucks for that dissolve. What do you mean?
We had to, each one had to be done 9 times.
We should have just stamped Dream on the...
Yeah.
Would you like another cup of coffee? I will, but Jim won't.
This is a big commercial. In,
that's right. Nobody gets
it. Those of you who are not
they're still living in the movie. Age, yes. Yeah.
We could cut this down to 38 minutes.
So the television... Vision version is about 10 minutes longer than the theatrical version.
So there's a lot of
good
picture. Stuff.
Yeah. They should add some of that stuff back in.
I don't think we cut anything that was actually funny.
Oh, this is Maureen McGovern. Because we couldn't get...
Helen Reddy.
Originally, we were going to have Helen Reddy do it.
And sing the song.
Satire on the Universal movies. But
Universal... She plays a part in the airport movies.
Universal threatened to sue.
Yeah, remember we tried to get George Kennedy. And he didn't want to rock the Universal boat either.
Yeah. Universal was the enemy then. And they are once again.
Hi, I'm Andy. I'm Lisa.
Fondue.
Mm-hmm. I thought maybe you'd like to hear a song.
And Lorna had her own series.
This song here was written by
Peter
Yarrow of Peter, Paul, and Mary.
We were on a show, Razzle Dazzle Rock and Roll.
Yeah, and we had to pay for the rights and everything, and he took... He sold the rights, and then he saw the movie, and he saw how we had used this wonderful song. He said he thought it was a sacrilege.
He
was really mad at us.
Well, not necessarily at us. He was just angry that he had given up the rights, that he had sold his song. Because
be
he had written this for a friend's wedding, and it was a very touching
personal
emotional song for him.
And it ended up in this piece of crap.
Yeah. He used it in his sordid way.
Yeah. See, I had always taken that personally.
Well, I always wondered what would happen if we ran into Peter Yarrow today. I don't know.
I think he's probably gotten over it by now.
What would he say? You guys. It's like, ooh. You're those airplane guys.
Jill Whalen?
Yeah. She later appeared on Love Boat
as
one of the main characters. But then...
I remember Jerry showing her how to do that.
Jerry did that a lot. That, actually.
Following around Robert Stack, telling him how to do John Biner doing Robert Stack.
Should we tell that story?
Sure.
Yeah. We... had always listened to this some record we had where John Biner was imitating Robert Stack, and he was he's the big chief, the top dog, the main man, the head guy. I can't remember what Biner's dialogue was, but something
Stack
about where Stack
Elliot
was dealing Elliot Ness and droning on. Yeah. And I don't imitate it well, but it was that kind of cadence, and so we wrote the lines that in the control tower. There's at some point probably should be telling this story when we get to it, but who cares?
And you can slip it, yeah.
The you'll remember it. We'll make it so much more exciting for everybody when we actually get there. Anyway, so we wrote these lines when Bridges says to him, it's
his ship. Now.
No, he's got to do what we say or whatever. And then Stack says, no, it's his ship now, his command. And he goes and drones on. And so we were hysterical thinking about Robert Stack actually doing John Biner's imitation. And
because
so
we wrote that part for Robert Stack.
That was the one part we really wrote for him, not knowing whether he'd do it or not. But we always had him in mind. And so when we got to the first rehearsal, and we're reading, and or maybe it was no on the set. I think
on the
it was
set
we get to that part in the rehearsal on the set, and and Stack reads it. It's his ship now. His command. He's in charge. And it, you know, it was a whole different
he
cadence.
Wasn't doing
I'm not
Robert
imitating
Stack,
it
yeah.
well. I'm not doing him justice. My apologies, Bob. But you know, it just wasn't that imitation. So I was first of all trying to explain to do it faster. I was trying to every way I could, and finally I just had to do a reading of my imitation of Biner doing Stack.
Because Jerry and I had been doing this in college for years, just doing John Biner's.
He was a really nice guy, too, Bob Stack.
He was.
He was a wonderful guy.
I remember on the first day, I had to go up to him and ask him if he would dye his hair.
He still is a nice guy. He still is. I just worked with him, yeah.
And he said, you know, kid, don't worry about it. You bought the body.
Yeah, he has such a great sense of humor about himself and everything he's ever done.
He's sort of, I remember the first.
He was the one
really,
who got
he
the
really
joke.
Understood the. He really understood it too, because one of the first rehearsals we were first read throughs. Lloyd Bridges had a lot of questions. Lloyd was a great guy too, but had a lot of questions about the script. And he said, "Now, why would my character say this? And why would my and
he's
and,
actually
and,
trying to make sense out of his dialogue."
Yeah. And Stack just laughs, and he said, "Lloyd, there's a watermelon, you know, hitting the desk behind us, and a spear flying into the wall." He said, "Just talk. Nobody's paying attention to us."
Yeah, that was Stack.
I also remember him telling Lloyd, we are the joke. Just keep going.
Did he say that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Stack was so right on.
He got it.
He got it totally.
Yep.
Lloyd
only half got it.
In 1974, when we finished writing the first draft of the movie, we called up Stack's agent to see if he'd be in it for us.
Right.
And what did the agent say?
He said, "Is this a go picture?" And we said, "What's a go picture?" He said, "Call back when you get the money."
He said, "Oh."
I remember, you know, that Stack was offered a piece of the picture. A piece of the picture or another $20,000, you know, and he took the other $20,000. Oh, picked the wrong door.
Well, he thought people wouldn't be that excited about laughing at him. That's me vomiting. No.
Oh, that's right. That's you.
Yeah, that's me.
Always, that's you doing the voiceover.
Well, yeah. In fact, all the vomiting in the movie is Jim.
I later parlayed that into
big money.
This is my mother with brown hair.
Oh, that's right.
Oh.
This is when she had brown hair.
The man sitting next to me is a doctor. Sir, excuse me, sir. I'm sorry I have to wake you. You a doctor?
I remember Leslie Nielsen, too, at the first rehearsal, was not quite, did not quite have the cadence or get exactly what we were doing. And we had we sent him home with a tape of
the
Zero
guy from
Hour.
Zero Hour, yeah.
There was a doctor on the plane in Zero Hour, which, and just tried to explain to him what we were doing, the style. And as soon as he saw that, he took that home one night, watched it, and he got exactly what we were doing. And from then on, he was just a fish in water with all this kind of comedy.
Yeah, this is the George Kennedy part.
Right.
Most of these guys weren't our first.
No, British.
Bridges was.
Yeah, most of these guys were not the first choice. We went to, I think we tried Ephraim Zimbalist for some things. Jack Webb, we had a meeting with Jack Webb.
We always go to Charlton Heston.
No, actually, when we wrote the script, we were thinking of one of those TV doctors. Ben Casey.
Yeah, Ben Casey, whoever that was.
Vince Edwards.
And we met with him, I think.
Yep. I think, but he turned it.
He decided to do a TV movie instead.
Oh,
yeah. Wow.
Yeah. That's right, yeah.
In retrospect, probably not wise.
But, you know...
Who knew?
Yeah, we lucked out because we ended up with all the right people.
Yeah.
Despite our stupidity.
And didn't somebody turn... Some guys turned it down saying, "I don't like their movies." Like, they hated Kentucky Fried Movie. Didn't the guy Jack Lord maybe?
Well, you could hardly blame him.
But that to their credit.
The
guy who was on Rat Patrol or something. He was like, said, I will never appear in one of their movies.
Interesting thing here is there's no coverage and there's no take two.
We used to call this the mirror shot.
two white haired guys.
Yeah. Do you remember that? There was no coverage and there was no take two.
We were so
short
on time.
The walls didn't move, actually. And there was nowhere else to put it.
So sure.
The casting director could not understand why we wanted to cast Leslie Nielsen. So Leslie Nielsen is the guy he cast the night before. This is the short pants era of flying. That was pretty elaborate, gimbaling the plane, wasn't it, John?
I don't think we gimbaled the plane. I think we just shook the camera. Yeah. This was really, but you know, it works. It's
very effective
for
yes.
what it is. It's not exactly the perfect storm, but.
What was it we had for dinner tonight?
Well, we had a choice: steak, fish.
Yes, yes, I remember. I had lasagna. What did he have?
He had fish. Doctor, there are two more sick people, and the rest of the passengers are worried.
They'll take care of the passengers. Find out what the two sick people had for dinner. This is Captain Over speaking. Been a little bumpy up here, but we'll be past it in a few minutes. A couple points of interest. We're now flying over Hoover Dam.
It's time for another great story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Betty Nolan. Oh, the premiere. Yeah, that's okay. That was a disaster.
Chicago, this is flight 209er. We're in trouble.
The premiere, Michael Eisner insisted on having the premiere at Paramount Studios. He didn't want to leave the studio for the premiere, so that's where we had it.
On plane hiring those cars, you know.
Yeah, and they actually put the reels up out of order. And it was interesting. John, you're going to have to tell your reaction. But David and Jerry and I had three distinctly different reactions. I, because I was so nervous before the premiere, had gone out for a couple cocktails. So all of a sudden, Reel 5 comes up, and I start thinking, gosh, you know, this really steps along. We were worried about a pacing problem, but, you know, it's really moving along. David?
Well, I thought that the movie was getting such a low-level reaction that I was glad for the excuse of, well, the reels were mixed up. Of course it didn't work. So I was kind of relieved that there was a massive screw-up.
And I ran back to the booth and screamed at the projectionist like George C. Scott in Hardcore, take it off, take it off.
And the projectionist actually said to you, no, these are the right ones.
No, I said, it's the wrong reel, it's the wrong reel. And it was just at the shit hitting the fan. He had put up that reel too soon. And it began with the shit hitting the fan. So he took it off, and then he said, oh, yes, he found. And so we're sitting there waiting for 5 minutes, you know, for the next reel.
They had to stop the movie and put up the house lights and rethread the projector.
And so that's our
mother's mom. Yes. The famous. Everybody remembers that.
So he put up the right thing. But then when they got the movie started again, that reel was done, he put up the next reel, which started with shit hitting the fan. So everybody would come, people came up and said, yeah, I think it was too much having shit hit the fan twice. That's a funny joke.
But yeah, that's why I remember that. Oh, that was so maddening. Could have done with less shit hitting. He probably just cut one of them.
This picture actually opened in Toronto and Buffalo. Where it first opened on a Friday. And it just didn't do any business at all in Buffalo. And then the following Wednesday, it opened in the rest of the country. And did quite well.
I didn't even know that.
It opened in Buffalo. I looked at the numbers. It's like nobody went, you know?
Well, I remember in St. Louis, the trailer was really good. And in St. Louis, there were two theaters, one where it opened gangbusters and one where it didn't do any business. And they attributed it to in one theater they had played the trailer. Because that's before they did all this TV advertising and stuff.
And the free dishes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Stan and Terry were the names of our lawyers.
Ken Toby.
That's Kenneth Toby. Yeah. Yep, from The Thing.
Do you remember we did this about 15 times?
This was a tough master, yeah.
Yeah, he couldn't remember a thing.
Couldn't quite even.
No.
How about Mr. Rogers?
That was like the 19th line we tried.
We couldn't come up with a funny line. How about?
But Steven sold it.
It's just hanging there.
Right next to the throttle is the airspeed gauge.
I remember you guys were kind of worried about how Steve Stucker was going to play in the style of the picture. So that many scenes were shot sort of so he could be eliminated from.
Yeah, but actually, in the first time we previewed it, which was on the Paramount lot, it was right after we had shown the picture to Eisner at his house, and his kids loved it. And Eisner, his first reaction, well, he loved it, and he said, where did we shoot this? What was the budget? He appeared not to really know the details of, you know, and then you explained it, well, we shot it for $3 million at Culver City Studios, blah, blah, blah. When are we going to release this? And Katzenberg tried to tell him when, I guess, and he says, well, what are you going to do now? He said, well, we want to cut the picture now. We have to recut it. He says, don't touch it. Don't do anything. It's perfect. And so he said, well, we've got to try it out, you know, put it out in front of some test audiences. And so he said, well, you can't do that. We can't do that until the executives have seen it. And that's when we had that. They arranged that screening for like 20 or 30 of the Paramount executives. But we felt that would be a dead screening. So we had them recruit audiences. But the recruiter just brought people off of Melrose Avenue who were in line to see Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley. And a lot of them were...
Spoke English,
yeah. And so the picture, just the first half was like low, you know, sparse laughs. And the second half was no laughs except for Stucker. He saved the second half. And so it really appeared just the picture just flopped. And I remember Don Simpson and Craig Baumgarten leaving the theater.
They were Paramount executives.
Paramount executives.
Yeah, two funny guys.
And they looked at me and he said, well, that was interesting. And so we just thought the picture just flopped. And but I remember Katzenberg kind of scraping us off the cement outside, saying, listen, you guys are going to get to work on it. You can cut it. You can continue to cut it. It's going to be great. Don't worry about this. It's just one audience and blah, blah, blah. So the next day, I think we listened to the tape, which we made.
We recorded.
And indeed, it did have laughs. They were just too far apart.
Tape of the audience reaction.
Yeah, tape of the audience. So we just realized we had to continue to cut it.
I think we realized that releasing the movie at 3 hours in length was
probably a little excessive. Yeah.
The intermission was funny, though.
This would be the first three-hour comedy. So then the next one, we recut it and took it to UC Davis, and that was our first official preview.
How'd that go?
It was great. That was great, yeah. You should have been there.
Yeah, I should have. I remember Harvard. We previewed it at Harvard. And the kids at Harvard had this tradition where they won't kind of give you the satisfaction of laughing at a joke, so they would whistle. But nobody had advised us about that. They told us that was the tradition. Ooh.
Can we replay that?
Let me tell this Harvard story.
Yeah. Jimmy,
so you were saying about the women at Harvard?
Whistling at women in Harvard? I don't
Whistling
know what you're talking
at the
about.
Women, yeah.
But in fact, that was their way of laughing.
But we recorded on audio tape the screenings, and then they would take this tape back into the cutting room, and they would actually cut the picture to the audio tape of the screening. And... in case you wonder why some of it is so choppy.
or in case you thought we were artists. We just cared about where the laughs were.
It was pace.
Pace.
This is the famous mirror scene. I don't know if anybody really got it. But...
It didn't get a laugh, but it was bizarre.
Yeah.
So excited. So we decided to take that concept and expand it into Top Secret.
And do a movie
not funny,
full of bizarre.
Jokes,
yeah.
Mondo.
How many times have I warned those people about food inspection?
I see you think that that's a mirror.
Yeah, it looks like a mirror, doesn't
but
it?
But actually...
just exactly.
Not a mirror.
Airlines. Oh, cheats and liars. All right, let's get out of here.
And there are a lot of meetings about
makes
that.
Makes me laugh.
There were?
Well, now that you've explained it, I get it.
Yeah.
That's for the first time.
When they built those roads, they had no thought.
This is a fellow named Jesse Emmett, who used to be in our theater with us.
Special Jeep up to the main road. In fact, we were lucky to even get a Jeep, since just the day before, only one that we had broke down and a bad accident.
Excuse me, sir. There's been a little problem in the cockpit.
The cockpit?
Actually, that's not gasoline he poured himself. It's actually just water.
See, the first officer is ill. But captain needs someone to help him with the radio. Didn't we paint this on screen?
Yeah, the explosion.
Well, I flew in the war. But
this is, I think this is the one post-production effect that was added.
Another $25 down the drain.
Please.
Look at the timing. It really did time out beautifully.
Yeah, that match just...
Right here, $25. Well spent, I think.
I thought it was funny, you know?
Yeah.
But I don't think even... Oh, there's that St. Christopher's statue.
Can you fly this plane and land it?
I think Leslie's just brilliant here. I mean, there are whole scenes when he doesn't move a muscle.
And don't call me Shirley.
Now, there's a line coming up right out of Zero Hour. The lives of everybody on this plane depends on
it. What flying experience have you had?
I flew single-engine fighters in the Air Force, but this plane has four engines.
Just in case you were worried, we bought the rights to Zero Hour.
Yeah. Watch how Bob's reaction gets the laugh all by himself.
Besides, I haven't touched any kind of plane in 6 years.
Oh, no, it's on Altogether that he does this great reaction.
That was Altogether.
Oh. It's coming up, Jerry. Just wait.
Hear this?
You'll see it. We must have missed it.
There's a rule coming up here too.
Oh yeah, ad absurdum.
That never quite did it though.
No.
We thought this would be funny, just endlessly paying controls. Much further than you would ever go,
but it must have gotten a laugh because it.
See, you see, no cockpit would actually have this many controls. But where do you laugh?
That was pretty funny.
At which point? I don't think anybody ever.
Big laugh.
Do you want to explain who Howard Jarvis is? Because I don't think it's a big laugh now.
Howard Jarvis wrote a tax initiative in California called Proposition 13.
In the middle 70s? Or yeah.
A very popular figure in the 70s.
Yes.
With California homeowners.
Yeah. So they have pictures of airplanes up on the wall.
I want the kids in bed by night. I want the dog fed, the yard watered, and the gate locked. And get a note to the milkman. No more cheese. Where the hell's Kramer?
Reveal picture.
Yeah. Okay.
Now we can't do that. Let's give a flame out's too great.
This is the Howard Anderson Company
process.
No, I was Hansard.
Hansard, yeah.
Right. Nope.
Didn't have passengers that can land that plane.
Is that possible?
Possible. It's 100-to-1 shot.
I shot this before the movie.
Oh, that's Jim.
You do? Who is it?
Yeah, I see the yelling asshole. No, I'm not the stuntman.
My job any easier tonight. Ted Stryker was a crack flight leader up to a point. One of those men who, let's just say...
This is a process.
We just speeded it up, I think.
Yeah.
Did we? Yeah.
Let's just hope that doesn't happen tonight.
Altitude, 24,000 feet.
Remember the big discussion we had about whether he should loosen his tie? No, he said yes, no. It was a big deal.
Yeah.
Eisner came to the set. And
then we did the focus groups.
Yeah.
Tie loosened?
Tie. So we wound up doing it two ways. Yeah. Big arguments with Patrick Kennedy.
We tried to preview it. And finally, at UC Davis, they all whistled.
This line coming up is actually from Zero Hour.
Mr. Stryker is the only hope we've got.
No, that's wrong.
And notice the lighting. It got real
dramatic.
Yeah.
Joe Bayrock loved to do those shadows.
Yeah. He was...
In fact, that's what Joe Bayrock did. It was all hard light. There was no bounce light, no soft light, just all direct hard light.
Yeah.
And it never took him more. I always thought, gee, why does it take so long to make movies? Because he never spent more than 15 minutes lighting a shot.
Mayday, what the hell is that?
Mayday, why that?
That little bit of stop-motion animation was done by Bill Hedge.
I had forgotten that one.
Can't stand it anymore. I've got to get out of here.
Some improvisation going on.
This is one of the few things that we added. We on the set. The basic joke was here, but then we added all the other stuff, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when Leslie nails her twice here, just for the sadistic,
one for the road.
Yeah.
You know, this is a movie that has almost no improvisation. So it's right. funny Jerry should yeah. mention that, because the script was shot religiously.
Yeah, yeah, people always think the two misconceptions are...
Here's one, Jim coming
we've, oh, yeah, yeah, wait a sec. We have to be quiet for Jim.
Scientology.
Third misconception.
Yeah. Look, Stack did that stunt himself.
Yeah.
Ooh. There's Jim.
Wow. Boy, he was young then.
Yeah. yeah.
Anyway, the two misconceptions are that we do a lot of improv and just come up with stuff on the set, and the other is that we're stoned when we write it. Neither of which is true.
I know, but this guy doing the flying has no airline experience at all. He's a menace to himself and everything else in the air. Yes, birds too.
Okay. He didn't quite deliver that line.
They barely got it out, but it always worked.
But now that's a case where the original line was from one of those old flying movies. He'll be a menace to himself and everything else in the air.
So what draft was this of the screenplay, guys?
There must have been. There were hundreds of drafts and, well, dozens anyway, maybe hundreds.
And all typed.
In a day and age where there are no computers.
And not even really Xerox machines until later.
Yeah, I remember this being about 30 drafts, this picture.
Yeah.
The bathroom.
That was after you came in.
Yeah, after I came in.
And there was quite a bit before that.
Now, when I came in, and the picture was called Kentucky Fried Airplane.
Really?
Yes. And we had offices at Culver Studios, and David was working. We'd sit in the office, and we would play Rondex, which I guess you eventually made into a movie, David.
That's right. Which one? Jeez. That was when Dawn Steele was the head of merchandising.
Right.
So we had a big merchandising meeting. And so she said, well, maybe you guys have some suggestions for merchandising for Airplane. So he said, well, we could do Rondex. And they said, what's that? Well, it's a game that we play. And so we started playing Rondex. It just consisted of us shouting out bogus rules as we ran around the table and climbed up on the table and yelled Rondex. And they were trying to all figure out what the game was.
Yeah. Be nice to the movie makers.
Give all the confidence I can. Stryker, you ever phone a motor engine?
This whole picture was shot on one soundstage. Every set was crammed into one sort of medium-sized stage at Culver Studios. You gotta
route them into Lake Michigan. At least it'll avoid killing innocent people.
And they didn't know we were there. No. Off the lot.
That's right. Do you know when we originally started working at Culver Studios? You can cut this out too. It was run by these people that really didn't want to get paid. What they really wanted was drugs. And so, if you gave them drugs, you could like use their studio for whatever you wanted. And
I hadn't heard that.
Oh,
look,
true.
Here's another joke that we always thought was funny.
Yeah.
The audience really
that's
didn't
great,
laugh.
That's great, though.
But
yeah, but
we we were hysterical. The day we filmed that, we just thought that's the funniest joke in the movie.
Well, and the watermelon, that was, the spear.
That's right. Nobody laughed at that either. But
yeah, but it was,
we left it in.
We had a good time making this movie.
It actually was fun.
And it was so short.
Too bad we never saved that automatic pilot. Or just finally...
Auto.
Disintegrated, didn't it?
Is that what happened?
I think so. It was in Jerry's garage for a long time.
The cheap vinyl, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, there's his mom again.
Yeah. Humiliating your mother.
And then, yeah. And our 100th breast joke.
Actually, this movie is pretty clean considering that we were in our 20s.
You know, this picture got criticized a lot when it came out for being
too risque.
Too risque, too raunchy.
Ooh.
Boy, times have changed.
Yeah,
we actually had to cut some things to get a PG, didn't we? Weren't we
on this?
This got an R the first time in.
Oh, really? Yeah, the first time in got an R.
Do you remember what we cut?
I think the rape scene.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah, yes, of course. Yeah, right.
But we knew that would never go in the movie.
Yeah.
We just shot it for 2 days.
I just did that for our own.
Here's the story. I just saw the black eyes again. When we went and played the movie in Germany, in Dusseldorf, I think, and they showed the black guys who were subtitled.
The African-American gentlemen.
The African-Americans who were subtitled. The whole movie had been dubbed in German, and yet when that scene came on, the audience laughed as hard as they did in the United States. And a lot of these jokes didn't translate. A lot of the puns just don't translate to another language. But yet when the black guys came on, that joke transferred. And we asked why the audience would laugh at that. And they said, well, what we had done is we had dubbed them in Bavarian.
So is that a southern German dialect, I
right.
guess.
And so that joke translated. And the moral of the story, I guess, is if you're going to make a movie that's going to be shown around the world, it's a good idea to help with the translations, especially a comedy.
This picture actually played very well for him.
Yeah.
Now, did you notice the vulture on the...
No, I never noticed that.
That gag was just having to pass by while Jim was droning on with his story. But you know, that was one of the, like, the 19
another black
gags.
Dude story. You know, comes to mind. I remember during the casting session.
And wait a minute, a moment for Barbara Billingsley.
Yeah.
That's right.
She was the sweetest.
You know, that special effect of Leslie's nose growing, we did was we took a broom handle and we painted it. It was so cheap.
Everything was cheap in this picture.
Yeah. No, I mean, we were such fans of Leave It to Beaver that, you know, when we had our theater on Pico, the most exciting night, you know, early on was when Lumpy showed up.
I remember when I met you, I thought you were the Cleavers, as a matter of fact.
I think I was more excited to meet Barbara Billingsley than anyone.
Yeah, that was what. And we also got to meet.
She was very nice.
She was really nice. She was a real mom, you know, sweet.
We tried to get Jerry Mathers and the Eddie Haskell guy for Kentucky Fried Movie.
And what happened?
Beaver wanted too much money, I guess, and Eddie didn't show up. we were expecting him on the day in the courtroom.
This was the most dangerous.
What does it say about doing commentary when you start talking about the other movies?
This was a tough one. Get this horse to lie down was quite a chore.
I remember there was a similar scene in Kentucky Fried Movie when we.
Actually, correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't when we first the original version of The Late Show or whatever that was of Airplane. Didn't we want Beaver to fly the plane down or something?
Yeah, it was the whole thing. It was, Beaver and Wally were going to fly the plane.
That was one incarnation. You get the idea, we were a little fixated on that show. It was kind of primal. That was
obsessed.
Getting that horse under the bed was a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pretty amazing that they got that horse to lie down.
Well, and did he raise his head right at the right time?
Hello?
Here's an old Dodger reference.
Pinch hitting for Pedro.
It's now owned by Fox. I guess I'll have to cut this out. Huh?
How you doing?
Oh, no, look at
that guy's
any idea?
Another
quality job. It didn't come off. That's
no,
right. See the guy? It was supposed to come off. It was a pillow beard that we took so much time and care to make up and test it so that it would come off when the wind blew. And that was really the joke, that his beard blew off and it didn't work, so.
So we left it in.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's Jonathan Banks, who became the villain in all of Beverly Hills Cop movies.
Two more minutes. It could be miles off course.
That's impossible. They're on instruments.
Well, this is another one of the 25 jokes that couldn't work.
It's going to be a real sweat. Gunderson, let me know when you get anything. Got a cigarette, Nels?
Every time we wanted Stack off stage, he said, got a cigarette, Nels?
And he'd walk away. In fact, there was no Nels at all.
Yeah. But I think that was a reference to Zero Hour.
Right.
They had a character. There's Len Mui.
Look out. Another pun.
Half an hour, that's 45 minutes. Who's flying the plane? One of the passengers. But he's an experienced Air Force pilot, a flew during the war, so there's no cause for alarm. Henshaw, take over.
What kind of plane is it?
Oh, it's a big, pretty white plane with red stripes.
When we used to have our theater on Pico Boulevard, this fellow, Stephen Stucker, was in our theater group with us.
We called him up with a lot of the straight lines, and he supplied the
punchlines.
The punchlines, and so that's what you see in the movie.
He's really the only one that could write for himself.
Yeah.
Oh, now this is...
Oh, and the last picture is of Howard's grandson.
Howard Koch's, Howard W. Koch's grandson. Billy Koch.
Who's now a grandfather himself.
Who's, yeah.
You had to correct yourself and put in the W, because Howard always wanted to be Howard W. Koch, because didn't want to be confused with a communist.
So Howard wrote Casablanca.
Who wrote Casablanca?
Yeah. Was that why?
Yeah.
Well, that's a big deal in that family, because, you know, Howard Koch Jr. now is Hawk.
Yep.
They're big on their names. Well, here's an old reference.
Yeah.
At the end of 60 Minutes, there used to be a debate called...
Point Counterpoint.
Point Counterpoint, yeah.
And in fact, didn't we use this, those two for in Kentucky Fried Movie?
Yeah. This is our only drug joke.
Yeah, this they probably tried to cut out the ratings board.
Would you like a little whiskey, man?
Certainly not.
Did we have to alter the film when it was rated R? Did we take anything out?
Yeah, I think we had to cut something.
But that was PG, huh?
How are the passengers doing?
Yeah, well, you know, back at the end of the 70s, you know, it wasn't quite the deal it is today.
Yeah.
I'm doing everything I can. And stop calling me Shirley.
This is the first thing we shot on the first day. that shot of Leslie walking out and saying, "Don't call me Shirley."
And that's when they got what the movie was about.
That's, yeah, because Paramount didn't really understand the movie until then. And
there's Jim again.
You're vomiting.
Here I go. It's just nobody can quite do it as well as Jim.
Well, thank you.
Bring in the lefty. Jim came in through heat.
Are you all right?
Oh, Dr. Rumack, I'm scared.
The Rumacks were our next door neighbors in Milwaukee.
You know, you never know it by looking at them now, but at Paramount, they were always known as the boys. And everybody at Paramount called them the boys. Z-A-Z.
Pretty soon. How are you bearing up?
Well, to be honest, I've never been so scared. But at least I have a husband.
You're not supposed to sit here and laugh at it.
Worked like a charm every time.
Did it?
Yeah.
Did
it?
I don't remember
it was
a big
joke.
Laugh, but I
no,
was
it was.
Yeah,
it was.
That was
it.
26 and not married.
Nicely staged.
Yeah, just like Hal Bartlett staged it in Zero Hour.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we, you know, did a few shots in our
own. Yeah. What war did we think this was?
He's whatever stuff.
Just the war.
Yeah, it was the war.
You'll have to decide.
This was Charlie Bluedorn's favorite scene.
And Charlie Bluedorn was?
He was the head of Gulf and Western at the time.
He owned the studio, along with about 20 other companies.
And sugar plantations.
Yeah. They said it's Charlie Bluedorn used to make more money just on the phone trading sugar futures than all of Paramount.
And each morning he would call up Eisner and Diller and yell at them and tell them that.
Might break. Gotta remember who you're dealing with.
Did you ever meet him?
Yeah.
Was
that a lead in?
Yeah, go ahead, tell a story. Yeah. Nothing else has gone on.
We were in Deauville, I think, doing press after the movie opened. And I think at that time, Paramount wanted to sign. I guess they had neglected to make a multi-picture deal with us, so they wanted to sign us up for another picture. And I think we were kind of holding out for a little more money. And so we went out to lunch in Deauville with Barry Diller, Michael Eisner. I think Katzenberg was there. And Bluedorn. And they brought us in to meet Bluedorn.
Henry Kissinger was on the
Yeah. And that's where we met Charlie. No, I think when we met him, we said, we wanted to, he said, well, why haven't you signed up yet for another picture? And I think we said immediately, well, we just don't want to deal with these middlemen, referring to Eisner and Diller. We want to go right to the top. And he laughed. He thought that was great. And then we sat down and had lunch, and he told us about, he was telling us, giving us this whole speech about loyalty, how we should be loyal to the studio that brung us, I guess, and told us it was about Who was the guy at MGM who was convicted?
Beagleman.
He told a story about David Beagleman, how he was disloyal. And it reminded me of Kentucky Fried Movie, because in that movie...
This was one of those scenes.
Jerry's pouring gasoline on himself.
I'm just hanging myself. Oh, God. And then I remember in third grade.
Then you won't get to hear the punchline.
Oh, we'll tell the punchline.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Well, now they have to read my book.
If you want to hear the punchline, write to David Zucker.
Care of
Paramount Pictures.
I don't think I work there anymore.
And win just one for the zipper. I don't know where I'll be.
Newt Rockney.
This is one of those scenes that we just added because they told us when we got to the studio that you had to have a point at the end of the second act where the hero chickens out and then somebody talks him into going back and being the hero. And so we said, okay, we'll do that.
We're malleable.
We said, all right. It's kind of a stiff thing, but I guess you got to do it. It's because it's a movie.
Listen to me, Kramer. Dr. Rumack says the sick people are in critical
condition. I think this is coming up with this the scene that's stacked, the John Biner imitation.
Landing like this means you more than anybody. I'm ordering you to stay up there.
No dice, Chicago. I'm giving the orders and we're coming in. I guess the foot's on the other hand now, isn't it, Kramer?
He's very good at doing that.
He'll never make it, Miss Soup. Never. Not one chance in a million.
I know. But it's his ship now, his command. He's in charge.
He's a boss, head man, top dog, big cheese, a head honcho.
Captain!
Number.
Look at this!
So Jerry had to show Robert Stack how to do that.
You're like negligent.
There's a sale at Penny's.
All right, I'll need three men up on the tower. You, Newbar, you must see us.
Me, John, Big Tree.
Stand by, Stryker. We're going to the tower.
Most of the names of these guys were people that we went to high school with.
The tower! The tower!
And they all sued later.
Yeah.
Rapunzel!
Stewardess, How soon do we land?
Oh, it won't be long now. Try not to worry.
This is a personal favorite. Try not to worry.
Needless to say, this picture only had one airplane sale in the entire world. It's Aeromexico. Actually bought this picture to run on an airplane. No other airline ever bought it.
They did, huh?
Oh, God. That's terrible.
You know what's coming up here.
See?
You had to have them smell it.
Back in 1980, that was right. Today, boy, the first joke they cut.
Now, there's a chance that we can save them if Stryker can get that plane down in time.
That isn't much of a chance, is it?
I don't know, Lynn. I don't know. Well, we're doing everything we can. Now, excuse me, huh?
Where did you get that dress? It's awful, and those shoes and that coat. Jeez.
This picture opened up on the 4th of July weekend.
That's what...
In 700 theaters, which was a lot of theaters.
Was it really July 4th weekend?
Yeah, it was July and July 2nd.
In just 700 theaters?
That was a lot of theaters.
In those days.
And it broke the house record at the Bruin. In fact, in the first 2 days of the picture actually covered the cost of making the picture. The first 2 days, first days of exhibition.
So they were happy.
Yeah.
Blue Dorn was especially happy. I remember he told us about loyalty.
There used to be an Air Poland scene in there with Jose Feliciano and who was blind, and with his guide dog. Flying Air Poland, and when that came out in the press, there was such...
Well, we got a call from the
such
Polish
a lot of complaints.
Anti-Defamation League.
Yep.
Yeah, but subsequently, I know I've seen Ray Charles flying an airplane as a joke in a movie.
WZAZ in Chicago, where disco lives for
This got applause.
Yeah.
Watch your attitude, Struggy. You're too erratic. You can't come straight in.
It was kind of the end of disco then.
For 2 hours of flying.
I'll take it, Elaine. Listen to me, Kramer. We have people up here who will die in less than an hour, let alone two. I may bend your precious airplane, but I'll get it down.
Anybody heard any good jokes lately?
Not recently.
Yeah, not recently, not for the last half hour. Okay, Kai walks into a...
Boy, if this picture was any longer, there'd be complete silence. Yes.
I wanted you to know now. I'm very proud.
We're going to leave a space here for you to supply your own commentary.
Did you go out with her?
The gear is down, and we're...
Jerry?
Who are you talking to?
All right, he's on fire.
That was just to the room.
Put out all runway lights except Niner.
Captain, maybe we ought to turn on the searchlights now.
Oh, this was on the set. We made this up.
Just what they'll be expecting us to do.
I just want to tell you both good luck. We're all counting on you.
All right, now just listen carefully. You should be able to see the runway at 300 feet.
Okay, guys, I have a massage scheduled, so I gotta...
It's okay, you can go away and come back. Nobody will know.
That doesn't stop you.
The first time my kids saw this movie, they just sat and watched it, and they were just into the drama. They had no idea it was a comedy.
Just what's going to happen to the play?
Will it get down? Are they going to be okay?
That's Jim doing the dog's voice.
They actually let us shoot at LAX. We actually got to go out in the runway, thanks to TWA. And
they don't do that anymore, do they?
No, not they after don't? This picture.
No, were they unhappy with us?
not you personally, just the film.
They were.
No, I don't think so.
No, they were very nice.
They were very really nice, great. And I think it's probably very difficult to actually do that today.
I remember shooting out on Aviation Boulevard.
Yep.
A lot of these shots.
Too fast. I know.
We were actually on the runway, too, at LAX.
That's right.
Below 700 now, still going down. There was no such thing as second unit. 650,
625. Yeah, on this one. Yeah, no, we did everything.
Sound your alarm bell, now!
All right, now, everybody, get in crash position!
Actually, I was looking through the cost report, and there was a thing for special shooting units, and they spent $15,000, so... So there must have been something, you know? It might have been the background plate for this.
Oh, yeah.
Now, why don't you tell them how you did that?
Oh, yeah, we hung the Lloyd upside down. And turned the camera upside down, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And Lloyd was pretty great. He could hang upside down for a really long time, more than I
in those days
certainly could.
Yeah. that was some stock footage that we there existing. The runway lights just went out.
Yeah, you know, actually, the stock footage was all purchased from Universal for practically nothing. And
when they discovered that
it was now in this hit movie, they were really furious. And in fact, I think never did that again. These are all the plates from.
But this we shot
airplane.
In a helicopter.
Yes,
oh, that's
that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep. It was like, and also they used the plane going through the glass in some other movie, I think. And when Howard discovered it, he discovered that some Paramount lawyer had given it away for nothing. This would probably be a good time to say that we had nothing to do with Airplane 2.
Oh.
That's right. That's actually a story, too.
Boy, they wanted you to do that movie. They just were relentless in their pursuit of you to do that picture.
They really want us to do a sequel, and I think we all felt we had just done every airplane joke we could think of. I mean, we had scoured every old flying movie and just had, for years, been thinking up all these airplane jokes, and we just thought we can't think of of anymore. And so we just, and also I think it kind of, it sort of bored us to go back and do the same thing twice. So we just didn't really feel like it. And at the time, I think we didn't realize how much money we could have actually made.
So they went ahead and did it really, without us. And to this day, none of us have ever seen it.
We never could bring ourselves to see it.
Even the miniatures were shot right there at Culver City.
Yeah. On a stage there, stage 7.
Mike Fennell.
Yep. Generally in charge of a lot of things. Remember some guy got hurt doing that.
Oh, really?
He broke his nose.
Oh,
yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So we felt bad and we paid him. I want
to tell you both. Good luck. That's a good thing.
Only stunt adjustment in the movie.
But it was worth it. It was a great joke.
Yeah, mm-hmm. it's a wonderful joke.
Stryker, you all right?
Yeah. We're okay.
Ted, that was probably the lousiest landing in the history of this airport.
This is straight out of Zero Hour, isn't it?
Right.
Here, particularly me. I'd like to buy you a drink or shake your hand.
Give the audience a little satisfaction there. Mm-hmm.
This is a sense of droning on here.
I think that shot was right out of Zero Hour 2.
Yeah, camera.
Panning down, yeah.
Okay, all right. Have a nice day. Have a nice day. Thank you for flying Transamerica.
Was she? I think she improvised that.
Christmas, Ted, what does that mean to you? To me, it was a living hell.
This always made us laugh hard. I don't know that this got the biggest laugh in the theater, but I think the three of us always.
Of course you don't. No one does. It never happens. Sorry, Ted, it's a dumb question. Skip that.
That never happens.
Okay, have a nice day.
That's all we had of the plane, by the way. That's just the entire piece of it.
That's the other, yeah. That's
no more of it.
Wondering why we're not getting any wider. That's what's done on a stage, right? That was done. Why didn't we do that out on the runway? Because
I think we had the runway for like 3 hours or something.
Oh, so yeah.
Or half a night.
It's an interesting movie, Kiss.
Yeah.
Elmer giving it his all there.
Listen to this chorus, though. Screech. Makes me laugh that it was actually hard for them to do because they all have such perfect pitch, the singers. Transamerican actually is a real airline, but it's a cargo airline. So
yeah, so we could do it.
They gave us the rights. Thank you, Transamerican.
That was suggested by a grip, I think, that last...
Yeah.
The joke, yeah, the last gag, yeah.
And we filmed that when we were doing regular production?
Yeah. Hmm.
Well, our apologies for the second half of this.
they started this too late, if we'd done it in the morning.
We kind of petered out. But
we'll call Paramount and have them let us redo it.
Yeah. Or why don't we just bring in, see if we can get Jay Leno in here or something like that, or Don Rickles.
So you do need comedians.
So, yeah.
When we used to do press interviews together, we'd walk into a room and you could see the look in these guys' eyes, like, "Wow, I'm going to spend some time now with these zany, wonderful, funny guys," and then you could kind of see the disappointment in their faces. They're actually boring.
We never
they have nothing to say.
We never failed to bore people. We just one of the worst was doing interviews too with the press, because it was the same questions over and over again. It was like Russian roulette. We would just say who, because they'd ask a question and nobody would answer, and whoever couldn't stand the silence, finally had to speak up.
Yeah, one writer wrote about one of us being a master of the hangdog expression.
We finally had to, in order to have some, but we finally had a contest to see who could get the biggest lie in print.
That's what we made up skeet surfing.
Yeah.
There's Hunt Lowry. He works all the time.
Unlike the rest of us.
Yeah. Hunt's still funny.
One career that wasn't destroyed.
Well, that's because he has the most expensive taste. Yeah. He's got to keep working.
He still buys all that expensive wine.
Yeah.
Should have had some over here when we started this thing. Might help.
Where's Hunt when you need him?
Do we have funny end credits at the end of Kentucky Fried Movie?
Well, Klon's Army. I mean, where we know every name.
Thanks for
Kim
Jorgensen sent me the script, so I'll be eternally grateful.
Is that how we met?
Yeah.
Oh,
he says, all right. You got to call John.
Susan
Basin.
Arnold. She's a big producer now.
That's right.
Gretchen Rennell, I think, moved to Ojai.
Wasn't this the start of actually doing intentionally silly credits sometimes?
Mary Spagarino. I think he's still alive. Remember him?
Oh,
he
really?
Was about 75 years old.
Right.
And I hired him because he did Attack of the Crab Monsters.
Yeah.
And he used to sit there and do the crossword puzzle all day.
And you knew he wasn't going to get in the way.
Yeah. And he would say, you know, he'd say, I don't know why you worry. It's going to take as long as it takes and cost whatever it costs.
So we did do some jokes in the credits here. We had Mike Fennell's credit.
Right. And, okay. and John's joke was the space for rent, isn't it? Or your name could go here or something?
Oh, I'll have to.
I have no recollection.
Yeah. He did a joke.
We had to make the credits really long because the picture is quite short.
Yeah.
Yes, an unusually slow crawl.
There's Ron Smith. He's with us today.
There's Nancy Kikuzo.
Well, I remember they were really upset about this copyright notice.
Oh, this was right. Yes, so there.
The FBI got in touch with him then.
Yeah, no, they called me. Yeah,
they
were
called you.
Yeah, yeah. Jack Valeni, you know.
And it's like they were going to recall the movie?
Yeah, but they'd already made the prints and they couldn't do it.
It's too late, yeah. They felt we were mocking them.
And we were. Wow, glad that's over.
Well, can we go home now?
Good God, I hope so.
Thank you. I can't believe you paid for this. Yeah.